Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for being here and for the first two readings. Wow. Great to be here. This is a short story. It's called Now That She's Gone Forever. My mom was great, but she didn't know how to let go. I mean, we were best friends since day one, but she wasn't one to act her age. Someone said act your age is the most American expression ever. I don't mean to be the most American ever. I just mean my ma, she never acted her age or wanted to, and instead just acted my age. She couldn't help it. She admired and adored me, so she wanted to be like me and be my age and not hers. Maybe she didn't act my age when I was a baby. I mean, she didn't wear diapers and crawl around with me on the floor and cry for a bottle, as far as I know. And if she did, I'm grateful she never told me. And glad we were too poor for home movies and lots of photos back then, because who would ever want to see such a thing? We worked in downtown Wilmington at a candy store, making people happy from 9 to 2:30 p.m., and then got a job in a liquor store, and then in a diner on Kirkland Highway, and then for a carpet company. And she was a seamstress who mended things for several people through the years. Thank God my father sent us money for rent each month. He was a nice guy, but 15 years older than my mom, and he'd always wanted to go to Alaska. So he did, just after I was born. By the time I was two, we were wearing all the same outfits, which she sewed herself late at night on the Singer sewing machine under a lamp in the front room, which was kind of a drafty porch with plastic over the windows. So she wore the blue coat with the black velveteen collar, which was just like my blue coat, only longer. She also got Gail Tryon, the neighbor lady, to sew. We're twins, she liked to say. We'd stand in front of the mirrors and make the same facial expressions to prove it. When I was seven, we marched in the mother-daughter parade in Atlantic City in happy dresses covered with nice red and green apple print, and people took our picture. One day, Gail Tryon told me we were heading for a crash. That's a terrible thing to tell a child. In my case, it made me the most anxious of children, since of course I thought she meant car crash. And every time she drove off to work, I panicked. When I was in the car with her, biting my nails, looking out at other cars like they were all enemies, my mom would say, I wish children could drink whiskey sours because you really need to calm down. But Gail Tryon was wrong. We weren't headed for a crash. We were headed for great times at county fairs, hikes in sun-dappled woods, and best of all, weekends in New Jersey on boardwalks and beaches. We wore these big terry cloth things, yellow with a single rose on the square breast pocket over our matching blue suits. The thing is, even at the time, we knew we were lucky. We'd take a moment to thank God and our lucky stars at least once a day. And we had so many colorful matching dresses then, and I can still see them hanging. There were the peacock dresses, the lighthouse dresses, the zebra dresses, the Irish fair dresses, and we had red and white striped matching summer pajamas. We had basically the same plaid jackets in the fall and even the same sneakers, red Keds with white laces. In the pictures my great aunt once took when we visited Ohio, we stand in front of giant corn stalks, hand in hand, smiling twins, one small, one huge. And it wasn't just our clothing that was similar, it was our activities. We liked the same things. We had years when we were up at the park on swings making up songs together. Every day, even in the snow, we'd sit side by side on the swings and start swinging and singing. This was in the years before I went to school and then the years when I was in elementary. She would sometimes pick me up at school since I had to get allergy shots, and I told her things about my classmates and she never forgot anything I said. For instance, one day I told her, Janine Twist's father is pretending to be allergic to lobster, and her mom's from Boston and thinks you should have lobster on Thanksgiving. And I heard Janine tell her friends that they fought so loud she thinks it's going to be Splitsville for Mr. and Mrs. Twist. This was fourth grade. I had never heard the term Splitsville, and I enjoyed using it, which was the only reason I'd told the story. And all these years later, I would never have remembered this lobster fight story if my mom hadn't asked about the twists several times after this. How are the parents of Janine Twist, she'd say out of the blue, as if they'd become important figures in her imagination. And I'd say, I'll have to ask Janine, but then I wouldn't ask because she was one of the most popular girls. And the only time I asked her something, a simple, can I borrow your eraser? She'd said, nobody who's not in the top 10 borrows my eraser. I hadn't even known there was a top 10. In ninth grade, I began turning a little evil. An evil teen busting out the way God must have intended, or maybe just following nature's directions. I have to forgive myself, because did I ask for that nature? No, that nature was thrust upon me and all of us, at least in America, or at least it was back in the 20th century. But I wasn't the worst evil teen, not like my friend and neighbor Tracy Harvey, who stole her mom's car and vanished into the night, leaving a note saying, "Don't waste your time trying to find me." She never came back, and Mrs. Harvey cried to my ma saying, "What did I do wrong? Why would Tracy do this to me, Maggie?" And my mom was not unkind, so she didn't say, "Well, Eleanor, you shouldn't have made Tracy go on a diet and clean the house and cook dinner and join fencing for fanatics with those rich kids." Instead, my mom said, "Look, you tried your best. It's all us mothers can do." And Mrs. Harvey said, "Well, that's easy for you to say. You and your daughter wear matching outfits, holding hands on Front Street." "Not holding hands anymore," my mom said. And now she's dressing in Salvation Army clothing. And I think she's smoking marijuana. It's over, Eleanor. And it was over. Splitsville. I broke her heart. I had to. Every child has to do it, whether God or nature gave us the job, I don't know. "Don't feel bad, kid," she told me one night. "It happens, and it was great while it lasted." But I was backing away from her even when she said things like this, because her eyes were sad. I started hiding in my room. I dressed in large shirts a man named Stanley had once worn to work in gas stations. I was called Stanley by a few friends at school. I packed up all the clothes she'd made me over the years, didn't take them to Goodwill, but hid them in the back of my closet, because suddenly I was caring about what other people thought, how they saw me, how they saw her. I cared more about their opinions than I did her. Like I said, evil. Around me, my ma acted like nothing was wrong and made her usual macaroni and cheese or stew or tomato soup after work. Life went on and we imitated normal people. She dressed like a mom, I dressed like a kid. Sometimes we watched television, Jeopardy, Golden Girls at night, but then I'd head upstairs to hang out the window and smoke pot and talk on the phone with my new stone friends, then draw THC-induced comics featuring bold mice who were themselves upstairs smoking pot and drawing comics. She found one of these comics once in my coat pocket and declared it brilliant. "Can I see more?" she said, and I said, and I still don't know why, that no, she couldn't see more. That was some kind of final straw. "You hate me," she said, and burst into tears. "You hate me, and I don't blame you. I'm a waste of a human. I don't even know why I thought I could be a good mother. I have a screw loose. All the lights are on, but there's nobody home. You should go to Alaska and live with your father." Then she went upstairs to her room. I didn't even go after her or call. Sorry. I was a stone-cold evil teen and thought the line about my father was laughable. I had no idea who the man was. And of course, after that, nothing was ever the same. It was like you'd feel if you were married to someone and then got divorced, but still had to live with each other and be polite. I guess no love is foolproof against cruelty and cold-heartedness. It can crumble, and yes, you can try to rebuild, but you never end up with what you had before you destroyed it. Then she was driving me to college. I wasn't Stanley anymore, just one of those kids who dressed in black and wore a wool hat even when it was hot. I don't know why I did that. I do know that I didn't really want to go to college, even as I wanted it more than anything in the world. The feeling in the car was hard to bear because I think we were both in shock. Where did the time go? My heart raced and I fooled with the radio. Then she told me about a dream she had a few years back. She drove down the highway and told me the dream like she was still inside of it. In the dream, she made us matching blue gowns to go to my senior prom. I stared ahead at the highway, seeing the gowns in my mind. "So then I told you we could go to the prom together and I match in our matching dresses," she said, and that's when I knew I was crazy. She laughed. "And then you set the dresses on fire, and I finally got the message, and I'm sorry for how I was all those years. I just never loved anyone the way I loved you." The past tense hurt. I wanted to say, "You mean how you loved me," but I didn't. "What a dream," she said. "Only a very thick-headed person would need a dream like that." "You're not thick-headed, Ma," I said, watching the cars fly past us, "but maybe get in the right lane." We got to the University of Delaware. In-state tuition was cheap, $1,000 for the semester, and I had a partial scholarship. She didn't help me pay off the rest. My dorm was old and brick and looked like what I thought college should look like. We both got out of the car and she asked me if I needed help with my suitcase and backpack, and I said no thanks. She gave me a quick hug, then got back in the car and started it up while I stood there. She turned to look at me and gave a quick wave. As I watched her drive away, it finally hit me that tomorrow I'd be waking up in a building with a stranger across the room, and she'd be waking up in our old house alone. How could this be? I was her life. I wished I could run after the car, but I stood stone still. She would write me letters in her small upright penmanship with the hopeful loops, telling me tidbits about her boss or Gail Tryon or a bunny she saw run through the backyard. I found those letters in a box hidden in the same closet where all our old dresses were stored. I picked out the lighthouse dress to give to Neely's funeral home for her to wear in her coffin. I tried to squeeze into the matching dress I wore when I was 13, but of course, no matter how hard I tried, it just wouldn't fit. Thank you.